Sifting through layers and layers of myth and legend, from 19th century dime novels to HBO prestige dramas to the casino billboards outside of present-day Deadwood, author Peter Cousins unveils the true face of Deadwood, South Dakota. He does so in his new book, Deadwood, Gold, Guns, and Greed in the American West. It is the true story of the Black Hills Gold Rush settlement, once described as the most diabolical town on Earth. It is a great pleasure to welcome Peter Cousins to the roundtable this morning. Peter, thank you very much for being with us.
And thank you for having me, Joe. I appreciate it very much.
What brought you to want to explore Deadwood in such detail?
Well, it's the uniqueness, I think, of Deadwood. It's unique among the iconic towns of the Wild West, and that uniqueness drew me to Deadwood. It was the only town in the Wild West that was created on land that had been set aside to the Indians by treaty, and so it was an island of trespassers, white trespassers, among a sea of Indians, and that isolation bred the lawlessness that we associate with Deadwood. It was not just a place where outlaws ran rampant like Tombstone, but it was an actual outlaw enterprise. And of course, I'd be remiss if I did not confess that the HBO series Deadwood really intrigued me and was another reason why I wanted to dig deeper into the subject.
What was it about that series, and especially since it was fictionalized, but fairly straight on, right? I mean, it did capture the moment and the idea of the place.
Absolutely, it encapsulated, encompassed the atmospherics were outstanding. If anything, it underplayed the filth and the slop and the smells, the horrific smells that were part of daily Deadwood. Awful from hundreds of oxen roaming the streets and the lack of good sanitation. And just they couldn't convey that sense, of course, on TV, but they did a wonderful job with the characters. They took some liberties with characters, but they got the essence of them right. And they got the essence of the lawlessness, the mad, might I be shot at any moment sort of atmosphere of Deadwood. And the whole sense, and people who lived in Deadwood later spoke of the sense that time was compressed, that things were happening so fast that they could hardly keep up with it.
Well, that is what surprised me so much about the story, and I had no idea, but this is basically a 3-year period of time, right?
Right. Although I do go back on my story and talk about the Black Hills, the Lakota Indians.
Sure.
Ownership of the hills and Custer's expedition, but the actual Wild West Deadwood town that we know only had a 3-year lifespan. Everything, and during those 3 years, you had the most storied assassination in Western history, that of Wild Bill Hickok. You had the largest gold discovery in American history, thanks to George Hearst. You had a plethora of murders. You had everything that you see in the series all compressed, and then you had a great fire that eventually destroyed most of Deadwood. And all that was compressed into 3 years. Just, it was head spinning.
So bring us to 1876 and the creation of Deadwood, of what brought those forces together to create this town.
One word, gold.
Yeah.
3 years earlier, the nation had suffered the panic of 1873, and the nation was still reeling economically from the effects of that. Unemployment was high, industries had shuttered, and there hadn't been a gold strike for at least a decade. And of course, the country's on the gold standard and it needed gold. And in 1874, acting on rumors of gold, George Armstrong Custer led an expedition to the Black Hills and discovered traces of gold. And beginning in 1875, prospectors dodging army patrols that were trying to keep the prospectors out of the Black Hills, since it was Indian land, an Indian reservation, they filtered all through the Black Hills looking for gold. And they eventually, in early 1876, coalesced around Deadwood Gulch, and the surrounding streams and ravines. And that's where the richest gold in the Black Hills ended up being. So that's what drew it drew people so quickly. I mean, from it's just half a dozen prospectors in January 1876. By April, you had a good 5,000 people who were crammed into this narrow gulch along a couple of winding streams, looking for gold.
You bring this up very early in the book, but the most diabolical town on earth. I mean, that's quite a moniker, and it certainly lives up to that. How soon did it, because it was really a criminal enterprise from the very beginning.
Correct. It really achieved that reputation very quickly, and it's remarkable that this quote that you just brought up about the most notorious, most diabolical town came from the New York Herald, and that was in response to an article in the New York Times in 1877 calling Deadwood a sick, sinful city. And the image of Deadwood arose, and the legend of Deadwood arose almost simultaneously with the creation of the town. I think that was in part due to its isolation, the allure of gold and possibility of gold, striking it rich. Also, there were what were called dime novels at the time,
Right.
which were kind of like pulp fiction today. And a dime novelist created the character of Deadwood Dick. Very soon after the town was created, Deadwood Dick was the prince of road agents, the stagecoach robber par excellence, and the venue for this was Deadwood. And the dime store novelist painted Deadwood in exactly the terms that you just described: diabolical, sinful, murders around every corner, prostitutes everywhere, gambling halls, 24-hour day nightlife. And he generated these dime novels at the rate of one a week. And this Deadwood Dick ended up being the second most popular character in dime novels, which again were the standing reading material of boys and men who wouldn't confess to reading these things. And he was second only to Jesse James. So that really helped shape the Eastern perception of Deadwood and started creating the legend right as it was actually, the town was actually living.
The land ultimately stolen from the Lakotas, but because it was not part of a U.S. territory or subject to any U.S. laws or governance led to that, right? And how was it able to be that free?
That's correct. And it was able to be that free because the government had not yet been able to extinguish Lakota title to the Black Hills. And the army, essentially under orders from President Grant, had given up trying to remove trespassers from the Black Hills and allowed the people of Deadwood to go about their business, which included protecting themselves against Indian raids. And Deadwood was the direct cause of the Great Sioux War of 1876, 1877, the war that was the bloodiest conflict in the American West and the war that led to the compression of the Lakota reservation and really the end of their way of life. And that was all because of Deadwood's presence in their midst. The lawlessness, complete lawlessness, persisted for almost a year after Deadwood's founding until it became part of the territory of Dakota.
I was fascinated as well by the fact that this was a as you write, a welcoming community to those to minorities who came and were welcome in Deadwood.
That was particularly true of the Chinese, and that's something I found remarkable when I was researching the book. And that's conveyed pretty well in the series Deadwood, too, how the
Right.
Chinese interacted, except that there was no Wu who fed dead bodies to the pigs, but there still was a lot of liveliness. Deadwood really had a live and let live atmosphere about itself. And at a time when the Chinese were being persecuted throughout the West, California and elsewhere in the West, there were calls for the Chinese to go home. There were expulsions of Chinese from various communities. Chinese were not allowed to hold property. In Deadwood, it was the exact opposite. Chinese could hold property. There was a chapter of Chinese Masons in Deadwood who mingled with white Masons. The Chinese New Year held great fascination to the whites. And that was absolutely fascinating to me. It was contrary to what was happening elsewhere in the West. And I think, again, it was partly because of Deadwood's lawlessness that, okay, let's all try to get along as well as we can, rather than create unnecessary strife.
How was it operating with other towns around of a Tombstone, of a Dodge City?
With respect to those towns or just the towns around?
Well, in yes, in respect to those towns. I mean, how was there a connection in any way?
No connection between the three towns. Tombstone didn't really come into its own until 1881 with the gunfight at the OK Corral. And Dodge City was already losing a bit of its luster by 1876. The cattle drives were moving elsewhere. Deadwood had its greatest connection with Cheyenne, Wyoming, which was about 125 miles to the south. And that was actually the closest major community to Deadwood, and they were connected by stagecoach. And which was a very tenuous link because the stagecoach between Cheyenne and Deadwood, the kind of the lifeline for Deadwood, was robbed more than any other stagecoach line in the American West in such a concentrated period of time. You could not get out on a stage without expecting to be robbed.
When it comes to the fall of Deadwood, when did that start to take shape? Because it never seemed, as we discussed in the beginning, that it was sustainable, right?
It wasn't sustainable for a couple of reasons. One, you just had to bring greater law and order to the community for it to thrive and prosper. And secondly, the disappearance of easy gold, what was called placer gold, the kind of gold that a miner could get right from a riverbed or dig maybe a couple of feet down into the earth and extract. That was the initial lifeblood of Deadwood. And by 1879, the placer mines were drying up and the placer miners were moving elsewhere to new towns with new gold discoveries. None of those ever would ever match Deadwood, but they were moving on, trying to find the next great gold strike. That was the principal reason why Deadwood began to lose its Wild West ambience. At the same time, you had George Hirst, the father of William Randolph Hirst, coming in and buying up a number of quartz mines, in which the gold was deeper in the ground and required greater capital to develop. And he was began developing a major quartz mine that turned into the largest in American history. And so gold mining became more industrialized. Deadwood started to shift to be a service community to the gold miners at this mine. And then along came the Great Fire of September 1879 that burnt the better part of Deadwood to the ground. It was kind of like the exclamation point to the demise of Frontier Deadwood.
When you look at what Deadwood means today and how it is considered, I mean, obviously a lot of it has to do with the fiction that you talked about early on, but for the people who live around there and within the Dakotas, what does Deadwood mean?
Deadwood is a kind of a celebration of the raucous days of wildness, pure avarice, greed, gunfighting. It's celebrated in that respect. And it's actually the home to a large number of casinos. So the gambling tradition continues in Deadwood. As you approach the town, you see posters of big boards with the images of Wild Bill Hickok, Calamity Jane. Every day in the summertime, you have a reenactment of the assassination of Wild Bill. So the town is celebrated for its lawless times, its outlaw days, more than anything else.
The name of the book is Deadwood, Gold, Guns, and Greed in the American West. The book is published by Knopf. Peter Cousins, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you. Be well. Again, the name of the book is Deadwood, Gold, Guns, and Greed in the American West. It's published by Knopf. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.